Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Manga Masala. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, everyone.
And my name's Gerns. I don't know why that. I think that's the first time that I haven't started with "and my name is." Like, I've just gone straight into that. Don't know why.
My name is. I feel like everyone had an M&M phase in their life, didn't they?
Is the phase over?
By far. By far.
The only M&Ms in my life are the chocolate ones.
Oh, my God. You're so cringe.
What do you mean I'm so cringe? How is that cringe?
So, such a dad joke.
I'm not even joking. Like, that is just, that's the way it is.
I don't like M&Ms as a chocolate. I don't like M&Ms. I don't like anything with like a coat, like a crispy shell, like minstrels, mini eggs. Like, I'd rather just have the chocolate.
I get what you're saying, but no, they were my go-to snack, even like way back in school, because whenever I was the designated driver, even though I wasn't like drinking, I would like get myself some M&Ms. I would just munch on them all night, and that would be like my
staying awake treat.
Yeah, that's my treat myself, but not the peanut ones, obviously.
The crispy ones.
No, just the normal, the brown ones.
Oh, just the chocolate isn't good. Like, it's not good chocolate.
There is something about that chocolate though. It's like the same as like advent calendar chocolate or Easter egg chocolate.
I don't eat that either.
Even obviously you don't celebrate Easter. Do you like never get like Easter eggs or anything?
No. I think when my younger sister was like little, my other sister used to do like an Easter egg hunt for her in the house. Like, just, but it was just to treat her to chocolate, to be honest with you, and obviously not for any other reason.
Yeah.
But that's the only time that, I mean, I might buy an Easter egg just to eat the chocolate if it's like cheap or on sale or something. But
so you have eaten them before? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I'd buy like a Dairy Milk one. Not a regular one.
Yeah. But no, but I think there is something about that chocolate that they use in seasonal things that is similar.
Like shit. Supermarket unbranded chocolate.
Quite similar to American chocolate, if you ever had chocolate.
It's so bad. Yeah. It's so bad. I can't agree with you on this one. I think I might be a bit of a chocolate snob. My favourite is Lindt. Oh, Lindt chocolate is the best. Lindt, Dairy Milk, Galaxy. I don't really like any of the chocolate. I mean, I'll eat it, but that's the chocolate that I enjoy, and I'm like, it's good chocolate. Yeah.
The thing is with like Dairy Milk and Galaxy, like you said, ultimately, when you think about it, the chocolate is all the same. Like, it's just got different tinge to it. Like, in terms of Dairy Milk, that's how all Cadbury's chocolate tastes.
It's just
got a different thing. And with Galaxy as well, that's how all Mars chocolate tastes. It's just got a different vibe to it.
I don't think Mars and Galaxy taste the same, though.
They do. Like, if you think about it, it's because like Mars has obviously got like the nougat and the caramel to it, whereas Galaxy is just like plain chocolate. But it's the same. It's all the same kind of original recipe, if you know what I mean.
Right now. I can't agree.
That's why, you know, if you're having celebrations, they all taste the same, really. Just a bit different. Anyway, enough about chocolate. Have you been otherwise?
Not good. Yeah. I'm so tired, guys. The past, 3 weeks that I've had has been insane. Like, I've got so much going on in my mind that I didn't even realise that I did a show in Manchester last week. Basically, I moved to London, and then I moved out in like a week and a half, and then I moved into a new place. So I packed everything, moved out, packed everything, moved out, and then moved to a new place, unpacked everything, in between went back to Manchester, changed my car, came back to London, and this is like my first 2 weeks at work, by the way, so I'm in the office like regularly, battling my nonsense sleep pattern, having to wake up at like 7 a.m. every day, and then my sisters have been in London since Friday, so we have done like 12 hour days shopping for wedding stuff. I am so cream cracking, and the whole time again, like, I'm doing work, I've got work stuff on, and I'm also like trying to settle in to this new place. Like every day I remember, like, okay, I need like a note, I need this, and I need this, and I need this, like just random stuff that I need. I've not had since the last 3 weeks, I've not had one day to myself. I think I'm gonna do that tomorrow, even though I'm in the office and I'm working, but I can't wait.
No, it's so important to do that. You might think like, oh, I'm only doing these minor tasks, like it's not actually taking that much out of me. But if you don't put aside time to actually just be with yourself and only yourself, like it catches up to you.
It's flipping taking a lot out of me. It's actually a lot, like because you have to understand as well. Like I've been unemployed for a flipping long time, so I've been living a crusty life. So it's a shock to the system anyway. But it's because in London, things aren't easy like it's in Manchester. Like if you need something, you just get in your car, you drive 10 minutes, and like you go and pick it up. It's like, you know, you got to travel like 50 minutes to work in the morning, and then like on your way back, you got to stop here, you got to stop there, and it's like the travel times in between is like 40 minutes minimum to go anywhere.
But it's at the same time, it's so interesting that you say that, because conversely, I think people would argue that, oh, because you're living in the capital city, you should have all these resources at your like doorstep. You know what I mean? It should be so easy to get like what all these small things that you need. Like, for example, when I lived in Leicester City Centre for that year, it was relatively convenient because I knew if I just needed like last minute supplies, I could just pop out and get them, as opposed to having to make an effort.
It honestly just depends where you live. Where I move to now, it's in a residential area, so there's not like the closest shop to me is like a Sainsbury local, which is like an 8 minute walk. That's like the closest like corner. There's no corner shops here. It's very very residential. Everything else is like probably Stratford is like the kind of closest hub, which is about a 25 minute walk. So it's not like, oh, I'll just pop out. And then the thing is, it's like you're carrying like loads of stuff with you as well. It's just been a lot. Been a lot. I miss my fun employed life. I really do.
Well, all the more reason to quit your job and come back, personally. Just saying.
How are you?
All right. Same old. Busy, busy. I feel like, again, even though it's like bank holiday weekend, it still just feels like not really. Nothing stops.
It's not restful, is it? Like, when you get to a certain age, things are just not restful. Like, you have to, like, it's like what you were saying before, like, you have to actively schedule in, like, okay, this is my rest day, or, like, this is my, like, bed rotting day, or whatever. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
But then, even then, like, today was technically that for me, but even I then end up feeling stressed because, like, I woke up, like, relatively late today and was like, oh, well, now I feel like I've wasted my day of doing nothing. So, like...
That guilt, innit?
Yeah.
And also, there's just, like, a never-ending stream of admin, I feel like, when you get older. Like, there's just always admin.
Well, sticking with the bad vibes, let's get into a bit of Bad Vibes Island. I will say it's definitely a bit of a less eventful week than last week, I would say. The main thing I wanted to talk about in terms of Bad Vibes Island was the two-child benefit cap. The reason why this is a point of discussion is because on Sunday, The Observer reported that Keir Starmer had privately backed abolishing the two-child benefit cap and requested the Treasury to find £3.5 billion to do so. This policy, of course, is the one that prevents most families from claiming means-tested benefits for any third or additional children born after April 2017. And, of course, as soon as this was kind of a speculation, you've got people coming from the right side of politics. And by that, I mean the right-wing side, not the right side. people coming from the right-wing side of politics saying, like, how can they do this? Like, why should we have to be paying for all these, like, working-class families who pop out, like, a million kids? Like, that's not fair. Like, often with, like, racist undertones as well, I will say. I'm interested as well to hear what your thoughts are on whether there should even be a cap.
I just think, like... A welfare state is giving help to those who need it. And if someone who needs help happens to have 17 children, you gotta fucking help them out. Do you know what I mean? It is 100% a very racialized and like a classist kind of analysis when people kind of talk about people with several kids being of a certain ilk. Let's just say. Firstly, like, there's obviously the welfare state encompasses a lot, right? Like, you know, poor people, disabled people, in this situation, children. And what baffles me is that oftentimes these people, you know, the kind of demographic of people, the political class who are like against you know, benefits for children based on the number of children or whatever, they're like the same people who are like anti-abortion, and they're the same people who are like, you know, children's rights and their children are vulnerable and we've got to protect children. And
also the same people that will be complaining, oh, we've got a declining birth rate, and they'll be like, oh, like people need to start having kids more.
Right. Just,
we can't have both.
Right, exactly. And it's like, okay, cool, well, you care so much about children when they're like unborn, and yet they're here in this world, like child poverty is at an all-time high. Like, those are just the facts. And I feel like, firstly, where's your care? But secondly, again, when you're asking me, like, what do I think? I feel like it's not about what I think. Ultimately, like, if someone needs help, they need help. If they've got one child or they've got 17 children, like, it doesn't do much to kind of, in the moment, to pontificate on, you know, whether, like, who the hell? I think that people have this idea that, like, working class people have children to live off the benefits, to be able to make a living out of child benefits. Firstly, I don't think child benefits is like that much to be able to make a living for yourself and your child. Like, children are fucking expensive. I don't think that two working class people are sitting there and concertedly going through the thought process of being like, you know what, let's have another child because then we'll get more money and then like we can be rich. Like, I just don't think that happens. Those child benefits are there precisely because people need help. They're in need. They're living in poverty. And we have seen in the UK, like, over the past few years of this new cost of living crisis, like, child poverty rates, they're seeing unprecedented levels in recent times. You know, and for me, it's like, why are you sat there pontificating and, like, kind of, like, creating this, like, fictional narrative about working class people coming together, they're rubbing their hands together, being like, oh yeah, let's get pregnant and go through the whole ordeal of a 9-month pregnancy and a birth and, exactly. And now with the child for 18 years just to get what, like £400 a month or whatever it is. Like,
I think it really diminishes as well the experience of pregnancy and what it means to actually raise a child.
Right.
Like, especially without the privilege of lots of money as well.
Right.
I think I agree with you, and I think that was where my mind was as well. I was kind of like, well, it's not even a question of, oh, should we provide this or not, or like, even if you're going to think about, okay, maybe let's try and dissuade people from having children that can't afford it, which is a whole other discussion in itself. I think ultimately, once the kids are here, like, they need to be looked after. Like, it's just a mad concept.
I agree. And I think it's like, it's nothing to do with, like, any kind of moral or, like, logistical reasoning against, like, child benefits. It's all to do with just, like, classism and the fact that they hate poor people. That's all it is. Like, they don't want to help poor people. Which is crazy, because, again, like, these are the same people that are, like, very anti-abortion, very much like, you know, God's children and whatever, and it's like, well, and there is like that, like you said, that racial undertone of well, actually, we're not on radio anymore, we can't just say racism. There is a lot of racism, you know, to do with the fact that it's this idea of like, oh, it's like global south cultures, they're the ones that have like a lot of kids and then they can't provide for them. I do think there's something that can be said for the fact that there might be some small demographic of people that have children irresponsibly, in the sense where, like, I do think there's something to be said about the fact that maybe people who are, like, intentionally having kids, you know, maybe could be a little bit more mindful about whether they financially can afford it. And I don't say that for the fact that, oh, it's going to have an impact on the state, but on the child, you know, because I do think that kind of just in general, and this is again, and this is nothing to do with like poverty and child benefits, it's just my view on parenthood in general, where I do believe that parents need to, before they have children, sit down and concertedly go through the process of, what do we want to actually have this kid, why do we want to have this kid, can we give this kid the best life possible with everything that we have right now. That's got nothing to do with this conversation, that's just me in general, but that does tie into it. However, it's just more right bullshit, isn't it? If someone needs help, give them the fucking help.
And again, it's like, there's not really any point debating it once the kids are already here.
Right.
Like, and I also think as well, like, putting this cap on things, like, obviously this cap has been in place for, like, a number of years already, and it's not exactly dissuading people
from having children.
Yeah.
So, all it means is that they're going to suffer. Literally, that's all it means. All it means is that you're plunging children and families into poverty. That's all it means. No one's going to be like, oh, I can't get any benefits. Like, I'm not going to have a kid. No one thinks that. Because no one's having kids for those reasons in the first place. It's like what the media might try to tell them. Certain politicians might try to tell you. It's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, it all goes back to what you were saying before as well about the fact that child poverty rates are at a record high, and yet we obviously still have that 1% of the country that live so lavishly without paying an adequate amount of tax. And it's like, why are we not turning our heads towards there? Why are people more angry about the idea of working class families having children as opposed to the richest in society giving up a small bit of their wealth to actually be subsidized and help said families?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's speculation at the moment, but hopefully the cap is removed, because again, like, ultimately the only people who are being punished here are the kids themselves. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like the parents are being like, oh, like, can't get my benefits.
That's the impact that this is having is just plunging children and families into poverty. That's all it's doing.
Well, moving on to beyond Bad Vibes Island, I realized this week is actually, it's 5 years since the series of BLM protests in the wake of George Floyd's death.
Was it? Oh my God.
Yeah. Which, I just wanted to kind of reflect on that a bit, because
this time 5 years ago, we were very much in the swing of lockdown.
Mm. Yeah, and I think we've obviously mentioned about that, 5 years since lockdown, but it's also 5 years since this event that happened within lockdown, that I think part of the reason why it was such a big thing was because obviously everyone was in one place, everyone's attention was all towards one thing, and people had no choice but to actually sit down and acknowledge what was being said. And, like, you know what I mean? I think that's part of the reason why it was such a big thing at that time.
Mm.
That being said, I think it's also important to reflect on, where are we now, 5 years on from that? Do we feel like anything has really progressed? No.
No, it's really sad. It is sad. It's a big... It's so annoying because this happens with so many, like, social justice movements, I feel like, where it's like you, in the swing of it, like, people are doing this because they're, like, genuinely campaigning for change, right? And they genuinely believe, like, this change can happen. And at the time, I thought what we was witnessing was like this global revolution, this like absolute upheaval of like, or the potential for an upheaval of like the status quo, you know. A lot of, you know, companies and conglomerates and just so many like factions of society were like really pledging themselves to this cause. And we were having conversations about race. But I do think it was a bit of a global watershed on conversations about race. I feel like before 2020, it was a lot more, especially in the context of the UK, where, like, you know, the concept of race, the conversations surrounding race and racism are very, like, I don't want to say hush-hush, but a bit more, like, it's a bit more sinister, it's a bit more, like...
It would be very easy for people to belittle what you were saying and label you as being overreacting, extreme, right. No matter what you were saying.
It's a lot more easily dismissed, you know, in the UK. And I'm glad that one thing that I do feel like has changed, as I said, like, I feel like it was a time that, I think as a result of that now, like, a lot of people would have a hard time denying and dismissing the reality of racism the same way that they would have pre-2020. So that was, I want to say, an improvement, but like, it's fucking bare minimum. And also, it's like the price that was paid to kind of get there, it doesn't feel like a victory. Firstly, but as I was saying before, yeah, I don't know, I felt like there was like this huge, we're kind of really on the precipice of this like global change, and it felt like it could happen, and then I feel like it just hasn't in the way that we've needed to. And it's just this, it just kind of, but this is what always happens with all social justice movements, where it's like people will pay lip service and, you know, they will kind of like pretend to understand and hold space and whatever. And then when it actually comes down to it, it's like not much has actually changed in the grand scheme of things. You know, there's like small minor differences. Like I said, we can maybe talk about race more openly, but ultimately that doesn't really impact policy and politics and, you know, institutions the way that it needs to.
Yeah. I think in some ways it maybe makes it a bit more dangerous because we know that this major upheaval did happen, and yet here we are 5 years later, still kind of in a similar situation. Like similar situation, like you said, obviously conversations are a bit easier to have, but at the same time, it almost feels like people can kind of own it more. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, they know that like the whole world can stop, acknowledge that something is wrong, protests everywhere and big upheavals like and whatever, and yet still,
and then nothing is actually done. It's true.
Yeah.
True. It's giving people like a get a jail free card. Like they can kind of like hold their hands up, give themselves a little slap on the wrist, and then like that's kind of it. You know, because there wasn't any like huge turning point or a precedent set for like consequence, for example.
Yeah, or like any actual accountability taken, if I'm being honest. It was all kind of pointing fingers at everyone else and being like, look at what this person is doing is wrong, or this is like how people in general can improve in terms of not being racist. And yet nothing was actually like, okay, no company, as far as I'm aware, was actually hold down to me like, look, like these we've been reflecting and this is what we've been doing wrong, these are the changes that we've made as a result of that, or nothing that's like stuck the test of time, to be honest. It's kind of like, I don't know what it was, but I don't know if it was BLM or whether it was Pride or something, when all these companies kind of changed their like logos, whether it was a rainbow or something to do, and then it just slowly just kind of disappeared and went back to normal.
That's literally what I mean when I say like this very like capitalist like version of activism. And we see it every year with Pride, we see it every year with like Black History Month, where it's like they pledge themselves for like the month, and then it's once the month is over, it's like, but we're back to normal, you know. And it's like, it's not these kind of like social justice movements. They don't need lip service. They don't. It's performative activism, you know, is essentially what it is. I think that's what you were saying, right? Like, I think we saw a lot of performative activism, and I think that's paved the way.
Yeah.
It's paved the way for that to be like a big thing right now.
It was a mad time to be on Instagram and to see suddenly all of black these people. The black squares in themselves, like obviously anything relating to that is just like, how did you think that was really happening? Also, like, kind of like, what do you mean you're posting a black square for black people?
Like, I was so confused. I was like, this is the height of your, I thought this, you are all like,
But even aside from that, the fact that I suddenly had all these people on your Instagram posting like little infographic things that I'd never seen. And that's the thing as well, like, I think for a couple of months, like, that was all I was seeing on Instagram, was just constantly sharing. And I'd say even myself, like, I felt like a lot, because obviously those infographics were being shared, I was actually sharing them more, and actually seeing, like, more, and, like, being like, yes, this is true, let's reshare this. And now it's a bit weird that it's kind of gone back to, it's very rare to see anyone post anything that's, to do with that.
It's true. It's true. It kind of just makes it seem like a trend, isn't it? Which is like, that's just not what it is. It's actually like a sustained like political movement. But
I will say though, I hadn't really thought of that positive that you mentioned about how it is easier, and you feel like you're going to be less ridiculed when you raise conversations to do a race now. I would say that is like a benefit. That it has been a watershed moment in terms of that. So take what we can get. But it just goes to show that the foot should never be released off the pedal, basically.
Agreed.
The other thing that I wanted to speak about that happened this week, it's been Cannes Film Festival. I don't know if you've seen
it. Yeah, I've seen like bits and bobs of people like...
Yeah. Which is, it's interesting how, like, Cannes Film Festival kind of turns into, like, a fashion thing of its own, even though, obviously, it's meant to all be about the films.
It's kind of like the Met Gala vibes, that would be everyone's just kind of watching what the people are wearing. I'm going to be honest, I've never given a shit about it. Like, I only ever know it comes around because, like, on social media, people will post about it. But other than that, I've never cared.
Exactly. But that being said, it's been interesting to see a number of South Asian stars on the red carpet there.
Yeah.
One of whom was Ali Butt. And, yeah, so Ali Butt attended the Cannes Film Festival red carpet. People are annoyed because she was obviously wearing this custom Gucci outfit that was very obviously South Asian attire, and yet Gucci on their Instagram referred to it as a custom Gucci gown as opposed to calling it a lehenga or a sari. So people are angry about that.
I do have an interesting take on this, actually. It's not, like, in and of itself, it's not the end of the world. There's obviously bigger fish to fry in the world. However, it is kind of like an anecdote of something bigger, because it reminds me of this recent trend that's been going around basically it's a new fashion trend where they wear like dupattas with dresses. I don't know if you've seen
Scandinavian scarf,
right? A lot of these like Western fashion like brands are now making kind of like, you know, gowns and dresses and having like a complimentary scarf, a dupatta as we call it with it, and South Asian women have been coming forward and being like, oh, this is like, you know, this is South Asian style, like this is how we've been dressing like for flipping ages, and a lot of these like Western white women particularly have come forward and be like, no, it's not, it's, you know, it's a new trend, it's not South Asian. Like, people aren't basically conceding to the fact that this is like South Asian fashion. It's been taken from, very obviously taken from South Asian fashion. And then I was watching a video from like a South Asian like fashion influencer, and she was like, she really firmly believes that the reason why that is, that white women are not giving the kind of due credit, is because they look down on like South Asian women, and it's because they're like, and then obviously we've spoken a lot on the show about how South Asian women as a demographic kind of generally are very desexualized, especially in the West. Like, South Asian people are kind of always seen as very uncool and kind of loser, nerd, smelling of curry type of, you know, stereotype, and you know, the women aren't necessarily seen as like attractive. They're not seen as like, it's just like the, you know, desirability politics basically. And I think that feeds into this idea of white women being like, oh my god, we would never copy like a South Asian, because like,
you know, why would we?
Why? Yeah, they're not cool, they're not beautiful, they're not sexy, why would we? And she made a really astute point where she was like, if for example it was like Korean inspired, everyone's like Korean makeup, Korean nails, Korean this, Korean skincare, all of this. You know, they give that credit. Or something like this, which is like very, very distinctly South Asian, they're just not given that credit. And it is just feeding into the stereotype of South Asians just kind of not being translated in that way.
Maybe in a similar lane as well as how people will often copy elements of black culture because they see it as being cool. Yet no one will ever do anything with South Asian culture, because how could it ever be seen as cool? Like,
right, it's the same kind of like, it's a similar kind of like racism, but just like opposite ends of the spectrum, where they like, you know, disproportionately mine black culture and then like hijack it and co-opt it and don't give due credit. It's this idea of that with South Asians, they'll do it very like on the sly and then not give that credit, because again, it's this idea that they're just not, they have no cultural value, they have no like cultural export value.
Yeah, it's like with black culture, it's like the whole argument is centered around this denial of, oh well, why can't we do this, actually it was Vikings that did braids first, blah blah blah,
right.
But with South Asians, it's not like a thing of, oh, why can't we do this? It's like, we're not doing this in the first place.
We're not
place.
Doing it. Yeah. Exactly. We're not doing it at all. But I think that, again, it's like the kind of, you know, Gucci as like an international, one of the foremost like fashion brands in the world, not giving the due credit of, you know, I think it, again, it's kind of very tight. It ties in together, in my opinion.
Yeah. It was the least that they could do. Like, it's very obviously South Asian inspired, yeah, what she is wearing. Like, the least you can do is give it the correct terminology. The thing is, as well, you've also got a load of people in the comments arguing, because some people are like, oh, why are you calling it a sari? It's not a sari, it's a lehenga, and vice versa. And it's just a bit like, come on, guys, this isn't really, like, the main argument we should be having here. Like, literally divide and conquer, literally. That being said, it was a lovely outfit.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was very nice. Custom Gucciari, like, that would have been amazing if they would have just called it
exactly
that.
What's trending? I didn't see that much that was trending this much this week, so I'm just going to speak briefly about TikTok that I saw that was quite funny. I actually sent it to Simran because it was related to something to do with her. Basically, it's from Naked Attraction. You know what Naked Attraction is, right?
Oh, yeah. That show is so fucking weird to me. Like, what?
It is, but I love it. I love it. Like,
I can't say I watch it. It's very creepy to me.
No, but it is, but it's also just like, it's, to me, that is the correct amount of weird. Like, I'll tell you what is trending, and actually it was too weird. The new Channel 4 show, Virgin Island.
Virgin Island, I've seen that. I've not watched it. I've seen, very weird. Very, very weird.
Because me and Mayanka saw that.
How does this relate to Simran?
Well, we'll get to that eventually.
Calling Simran a raging virgin.
With Virgin Island, first of all, me and Mayanka were like, okay, this actually seems like a cool, like, concepts, and like, it just seems a bit interesting. I was just like, you know what, like, let's just like give it a watch and see what actually happens. Because Love Island for me is washed now, so I was like, okay, maybe Virgin Island is where it's at. That being said, we were kind of expecting it to be that obviously they have all these virgins on an island, and the aim is to try and just, everyone just gets a bit more comfortable in their own sexuality,
right?
And
like, a bit uplifting, a bit empowering.
Like, yeah, and is a bit like, maybe some of the virgins end up hooking up eventually. Like, right. Maybe they share that experience together. That right. might have been like cute or whatever. It's not that. It's basically, I mean, it is kind of, obviously they're going there with the goal of trying to get these people to be more comfortable with the idea of having sex. But the therapists, it's a very hands-on approach.
Right. Isn't it like they literally get people who aren't virgins and then they're like encouraged to hook up?
No, all the guests on this show, like all the participants are virgins, but the therapists will literally engage in hands-on stuff with them.
The people who are doing stuff are the therapists.
Yes.
I saw a clip and I thought it was like other participants.
No.
They've got like half the participants who are like virgins and then half the participants who are not.
No.
That's what I thought. Fucking hell, those are the therapists.
All the participants are virgins, and the therapists, because obviously as well, you've obviously got people on there who are very much like kind of not comfortable with the idea of... Exactly, because you've got people on there that are obviously not comfortable with the idea of having sex and are very much like kind of just don't like the idea of being touched in general, just all these things. But then you've also got some people on there who are very clearly like they're not scared of the idea of sex and are quite sexually confident. It's just that they don't know how to actually end up being in the position that you would end up having sex. And one of them, like, they were obviously advancing with the therapy quite quickly because they're not shy, and but obviously you're basically just giving them a therapist to basically practice sexual things with. After one episode, me and Mayanka were just like, I don't feel comfortable watching this. Like, this is actually really? Like, yeah, it's not.
It's a bit exploitative.
Yeah. Like, first of all, I don't get why these people would want to go on this show in the first place.
Yeah,
but secondly, as well, I'm just like, it just to me that seems wrong, because also that person in particular,
therapist is a professional, like,
yeah, they were describing it as like a method of therapy, like, oh, that you will get involved.
No, like, that's very Black Mirror, like, that's very Black Mirror. I don't like that.
And the thing is as well, like, obviously this person that's like sexually confident but just doesn't know how to like chat up women or whatever, what are they actually learning from that? Because their thing that they really need to learn was, how do you like approach a potential partner? How do you like develop a relationship in which you might end up having sex?
Social norms, yeah.
Exactly. Whereas all they've really learned is, okay, this is how to have sex. And it's just like, I don't think they really...
It's a biological flipping impulse. Everyone can figure it out when they get to it.
Yeah, but I don't think that's where they needed the help. So I'm just kind of like, what is the point of this? You're basically just giving them a free pass to like lose their virginity.
Bonk on TV.
Yeah.
Easy.
Like, so, yeah.
Channel 4 is always coming up with these flipping nonsense shows, aren't they?
Some of them are great, but that one, not here for it.
Absolutely. Okay, fine, fair enough.
Anyway, the way this relates all back to Simran.
I was just about to ask, what's Simran got to do with any of this?
Because naked attraction, right? For those that don't know,
let's start rumors.
Yes, Simran, that's definitely.
Watch the episode, try and find her. That's a joke. She wasn't. As far as we're aware, she has not been on the show.
I do know someone that has been on it, though. It's mad.
Is it?
There's someone that went to her school.
Oh, God, you can't be so confident to do that.
Yeah, but I still don't understand why you would. Anyway. Yeah. Naked attraction, for those that don't know, because you haven't even explained, basically the concept is people are in these pods and the pods get revealed bit by bit. So you start with their feet, then you see their bits.
People are butt naked.
Yeah, behind the pods. That's the key bit that I missed out. But people get revealed bit by bit, and the person in front of the pod is basically eliminating contestants based on
certain body parts look. It's a date show, basically.
Yeah, and at the end, they'll choose someone to go on a date with. Also, they get naked at the end as well. So, you see, that to me is, like, the correct amount of weird. I can get on board with it. These people fully know what they're getting on board for. If they want to get naked on TV, let them do it. Whatever. Like, I'm...
And the thing is like, they're all civilians. Like, yeah. Nothing about this is posited as, like, therapy or helping people, like, you know? Yeah. There's no, like, moralistic message behind any of this. It's, like, a bit of fun.
Yeah. I'm fully here for when you're kind of channel switching and then suddenly you go on channel 4 and you just see just someone's bits right in your face. I can't say I can relate,
but fine.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a clip on TikTok that was going viral from that, and I don't know how old this is, but basically, obviously, I think one of the rounds is actually to do with accent, so they'll just ask the various people to say a sentence, and then the person will rate them based on that, and one of these people spoke, and they were asked, like, oh, like, where are you from? And they were like, oh, where's that accent from? And they were like, oh, the Middle East. And they were like, I think they were a bit in shock because the person kind of looked quite white, I would say. And I think they were like, oh, you're Middle Eastern. Guess what they said back?
Please tell me. Yeah.
Yeah, from Nottingham.
they meant the
Middle East of the UK is the Nottingham.
They meant East Midlands.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I sent it to Simran. No, but that was just, yeah. See, if Naked Attraction didn't exist, we wouldn't get that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't have anything against it. I just wouldn't personally choose to spend my time looking at naked people on telly.
Yeah. When you say it like that, like, I think it's more that my idea of trash TV that I would enjoy watching is that I'd much rather watch that than like the Kardashians.
Maybe I'm just a bit queasy about other people's naked bodies.
That was another reason why I stopped watching Virgin Island, because it was just getting a bit
showing stuff.
I don't know, but I know that in the preview for the second episode, one of the therapists was literally showing all of the boys her vagina and explaining stuff, and I was like, "Yeah, I can't. I'm eating. I can't eat whilst watching this. Like, what? What
that's,
is this?
No. That's not like, oh, tell you while you're watching, eating your dinner. No.
To be fair, Neva's Naked Attraction. That's more like kind of late night when you're just kind of bored and whatever. Like, if it comes on, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
It's fun to participate as well.
Yeah, good for you.
Give your own opinions.
Good for you.
Yeah. Also, a lot of the dates are in Manchester because they show the dates afterwards and you see like the little previews of whatever. And I recognise, like, oh, that's the tram. That's Deansgate Tower.
A lot of like TV, like first dates, that restaurant's in Manchester, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Oh, Manchester. City in the world. I'm coming back, don't worry, guys.
I'm coming home. Tell the world.
My sentence, and I'll be back, inshallah.
Right. Well, to round things off, my silver lining is actually sort of to do with the weather, which ahead of this recording we were actually bad mouthing. But I will say, you know what? The silver lining is that it's rained because it really needed to.
That is not a sentence you will ever hear me say, Carlo.
Look, I really hope that the weather can continue as it has been. I really hope that. That being said, the grass outside was looking very yellow. It needed to rain. So I'm glad that it has.
The sake of the crops, fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless you can provide a better silver lining.
No. I bought my Eid outfit. Eid is in 2 weeks, so I mean that's exciting.
Right, speak to you next week.
Bye.